Okay, final hour to go with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. We'll take your calls as we talk about these strange entities attacking people in their sleep. And welcome back to Coast, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us as we talk about these entities. What else would you call them? If we don't call them the djinn, what would we call them in English, Rosemary?
Well, most people think they're demons. And They certainly exhibit behavior that we do associate with demons because they're dark, they're malevolent and hostile. Many people make that automatic assumption. But I think djinn is a much better explanation for them.
And that, as we said, is Middle Eastern, and it means what, genie?
It actually means the hidden ones is a loose translation, and they are the hidden ones. They are invisible to us most of the time, except when they choose to manifest. They exist in a parallel world. In ancient lore, it was underground. They were expelled from their dominant position on the earth when human beings came along. And they're covert in their operations. They operate by stealth. And so it's a very appropriate name for them.
What was your role with Supernatural Assault?
Well, Paul contacted me for an interview based on my research, and I wound up having a considerable major role in the documentary. There have been other treatments of shadow people. Many people haven't really gone into depth on shadow people or explored the djinn connection. And because Paul had had his own experiences leading him in that direction, it was a natural fit for me as well. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Supernatural Assault is that it's a very realistic portrayal. It's creepy enough with the real life. Nothing needs to be over-dramatized or over-sensationalized. Real life is creepy enough, and it's a very Supernatural Assault is a very accurate portrayal of what the victims go through when they have these nighttime attacks.
Let's go now east of the Rockies and west of the Rockies. Dave in Bakersfield, California. We'll go to you, David. Go ahead. Hi, Dave. Dave, are you with us? Nope. Let's go to Kathy in Idaho. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. Good. What an interesting subject.
Oh, my gosh. I would hope it doesn't happen to us.
Well, it happened to me when I was five, or up until the time I was five. We moved to a nice house in Denver when I was about three, and I spent a sickly childhood in that house, as I recall, and I would run high fevers, like around 104. Jeez. And when my fever would spike, I would become very on edge, not just because I was physically ill, but it was emotional too. And then I'd drift off to sleep, as I recall, and then I'd wake up and sit up terrified, and I'd start crying, and I was in such great fear that I would get out of bed, as sick as I was, and start running. And I know the feeling. I was running for my life, and I was being pursued. And some entity or entities, and I never saw or heard anything, but it was just this terrible terror that you can't explain it unless you've ever experienced it. So what would happen is I'd run around the house and rouse the whole house, and my brothers and my parents would start running after me to catch me, because it was as if I was out of my head. I was just so afraid and crying and yelling. Okay, so then somebody would catch me and grab me, you know, and I would come out of it. And the last time it happened, my older brother caught me, and I kept talking and just blabbering about being they're going to kill me. And he slapped me in the face, and that kind of
woke you up, jarred you up a little bit.
Brought me out of it. So anyway, then my mom got me baptized. She got me baptized at the downtown Episcopalian Cathedral when I was 5 years old. And after that point in time, Although I would get sick, I never had another, what my mother called, a fever dream.
Huh.
And years later, in 2006, we had a family reunion in Colorado, and my daughter and her husband, I said, let's go by the old house. So we did, and it was still beautiful. We went up to the door, and the nice lady that lived there let us come in, and she said, oh, yeah. She said, we've completely remodeled the house. And she took me aside, George, and she said, did you ever see anything in this house that was unusual? Turns out she was a psychologist.
She knew. I said,
yeah, I had terrible dreams here. And she said, oh, well, she said, I saw a figure going up the stairs holding a knife in its hand.
Oh, geez.
So I said, well, goodness sakes, I don't know what to say except, you know, pray. But I did become a Catholic, and I wear the St. Benedict medal.
That helps. That helps.
It has an exorcism on it.
Rosemary, tell me this. Why do religious symbols, like things that she has on, a necklace and things like that, why do they seem to work?
They work because of the collective energy that's been invested in them over a long period of time. And I'm very big on the Benedict medal myself. There are certain angel medals also that I like to wear and carry with me. When you have a prayer or something like a saint medal, millions of people over a long period of time have had a belief in what it represents. And so there is a very powerful collective thought form that builds up around these things, and it's an energy that you can tap into. I don't think that amulets by themselves are going to necessarily provide 100% protection in all cases, but if people have a faith-based belief in what they represent and the higher power that's associated with them, that's something that they automatically draw on and can become part of their natural defenses.
If your guard is down, maybe you're drunk or something like that, are you going to get hit more by one of these demons?
Well, you can certainly make yourself more vulnerable, and not everybody who gets toasted on a particular occasion is going to have a negative experience for certain. But if people chronically overdrink, or they use recreational drugs to excess, or they have a more serious drug problem, those sorts of activities can weaken the aura. They affect the health, certainly, and that causes disformities in the aura, maybe even rips and tears, and opportunistic entities might take advantage of that. It's not going to happen in every case, but it raises the risk factor.
All right, let's go next to Jeff in Spring, Texas. First-time caller for us. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, Jeff. Glad you got through.
Thank you. Thank you, George and Rosemary, for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
Yeah, I had an incident back in 2010 that happened to me, and I've had other incidences in my younger years.
This one you didn't forget, that's for sure.
Yeah, the others I have, because it never happened that often, and it was a dream state type ordeal, where I would get so mad in my dreams because I felt like I was being picked on by some entity that I couldn't see, and I finally got mad enough in my dream to fight it off, and it never happened again. And then back in 2010, or when I was between 2008 and 10, I was going through a lot of stress through work, at home. I was living by myself, and then Hurricane Ike hit me, and FEMA wouldn't help. I had to do a lot of stressful, labor to work on the house and fix it myself, and I was just so run down. And then one night I went to sleep, and I never sleep on my back, because usually if I sleep on my back, I have these bad entity-type dreams. Well, this time I was laying on my back, and I didn't even know I fell asleep. Next thing I know, the whole room is just pitch black. and I have windows in there. The moonlight usually lights up my whole room. But all of a sudden, I'm laying there, and I'm strapped down on my back. And it felt like the blankets were being pulled tight down on me. I was being held down in place.
That's exactly what happens. That feeling of being suffocated almost.
It's... Yeah, and it was exactly what Rosemary was saying. And in fact, when I was listening to her earlier, she just gave me chills all over again.
Rosemary, have you heard that if the old hag syndrome happens to someone when they're little, they become sickly when they're adults?
I can't make that direct connection, but if people have frequent experiences that start in childhood that follow them wherever they go, that is, they're not necessarily limited to a particular environment, these individuals can suffer health issues later on. A lot of it depends on how debilitated they get from these kinds of interactions and assaults and how frequent they are.
We've got Annie in Alabama. Hello, Annie. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking my call. I want you to know that if a song is in a foreign language and I cannot get a translation out of Google Translate or anybody in the world, not even Urdu Point, I'm not going to sing that song, especially if it's by a musician who sometimes chanted.
You think you'll be tricked, huh?
Some of his songs. Now, some of his songs are perfectly innocent, but this is a guy from Nigeria from 1959, Babatunde Olatunje, who recorded Jingo Loba. J-I-N-G-O-L-O-B-A. Now, what does that mean? Do you know what that means?
I don't. Other than it sounds like Jingo goodbye or something. Ever hear of that, Rosemary?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
All right, Annie, what do you think it is?
I don't know. It's either Yoruba or Urdu, which is an obscure language spoken in Nigeria. It was also recorded by Santana, and I'm sure Carlos had no idea what he was singing.
That's kind of dangerous, isn't it?
It is dangerous. I want to know what it means. I'm not going to sing it. It's a beautiful song, but the devil can masquerade as somebody beautiful.
Well, absolutely. You never know what it could be. You could be summoning up one of these. Is that possible, Rosemary? Can you summon up these entities from below?
Yes, all kinds of entities can be summoned through a magical ritual, and the jinn certainly can be summoned as well. There are handbooks and textbooks for that. There are oral traditions that are taught for that. And I get emails all the time from people who want to learn how to summon the jinn. They think they're going to be able to send them out on errands and do favors for them. And I try and discourage people from that. If you would be able to actually do that, if you could succeed in summoning an entity and you did not have the background skill and knowledge and power to stay on top of the situation, you would be routed out pretty fast.
Is it conceivable that these entities want you to die?
Well, some people do believe that, and when I was researching the jinn connection, where I connect the jinn to shadow people, ETs, the Nephilim, the Archons, the Reptilians, you know, a lot of the dark entities throughout human history, I interviewed researchers and experiencers really all over the world, and including many with Middle Eastern backgrounds, and some of those experts felt that there were significant numbers of jinn that deliberately wanted to harm people and reclaim their place as the dominant race on Earth. According to their various creation stories, they were pushed out for human beings or because they displeased God, and that some of them want the Earth back, and that they are finding ways to do that. So is that a scenario? It certainly seems to be the agenda of some of them that attack people. They seem to be very intent on creating maximum harm.
Let's go next to Ken in Pleasant Grove, Utah, on the wildcard line. Hey, Ken, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George. very interesting program.
It is.
You know, ever since I was a kid, I know I was about 7, 8 years old. We lived in a house in California, and I would hear this scratching noise in my closet. And soon after that, I would be choked in my bed, and it happened night after night after night. And one night I thought, well, I'm just going to be real brave, and I'm going to get out of bed. I'm going to run over to my mom and dad's bedroom. And so when I heard that scratching noise in the closet, I hurried and got out of bed, and I went down the hall, and I started in their bedroom, mom and dad's bedroom, and I heard the scratching noise in their closet, and I looked, and I didn't think I would make it to their bed in time. And so I just turned around and kept on going down the hall, went into the bathroom, turned on the light, shut the door, made all kinds of noise. So my dad came and got me, and everything was okay after, you know, he talked to me. And
saved by dad.
Yeah, saved by dad. But then years later, when we moved from that house, I never had another experience like that until I was 19. And I've always been kind of a spiritual kind of a person. And I was getting ready to go on a mission for our church. And before the day before I was to go to the temple, I had an experience in a motel in Montana, and I was with my uncle, and he was taking me to the Carson, Alberta temple, mm-hmm. LDS temple. And that night, as I was drifting off to sleep, I felt like I was back home with my mom and dad, and I was in my old bedroom, and I saw a window, the basement window, and I saw a person walking by the window. It was just like Marianne described. It was a very dark person. He had a dark robe on, and it was with a hood, like a hoodie.
But on the outside.
But on the outside of the house, yes. And the next thing I knew, I was laying there in the motel bed, and I was being choked, and I could hardly talk. I was trying to. My uncle was next to me, and I was trying to call him and ask for help, and to no avail. And I thought I was going to die, literally.
How did you get out of that situation?
Well, I just started to pray inside. I just started to pray.
Even as a little boy, you learned how to pray.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yep. And that's what really got me through that experience. And I kept praying, and I used the name of Jesus Christ. I was praying to Christ.
Remarkable that you would be able to pick that up. That really is. Why is it when you call the name of Jesus or something like that, Rosemary, it seems to help?
Well, you can call on any sacred or religious figure that's important to you across the board in different faiths. And you're calling on a higher power. And a figure like Jesus represents a connection to the divine. Some people call directly on God. There are saints and other figures that are intermediaries as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the connection to the supreme higher power that can vanquish evil. And for some people, that's very effective. As I mentioned earlier in the show, however, there are people who have tried those remedies and they have not worked.
They
don't work at all, or they work for a while and then they stop working. It's like the entity either gets tired of the game, like maybe it's been playing along,
mm-hmm.
or it builds up an immunity to it. Some disease.
We're coming back with Final Calls with Rosemary Ellen Guiley in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. Rosemary, have you ever been attacked by one of these things?
I haven't had the bedside attack. I've encountered shadow people in the course of a lot of my paranormal investigations.
Mm-hmm.
In various places, and they have affected the home environment from time to time when I've done particular avenues of research. But fortunately, I've not had the case of the black silhouette with the hat. Now, I have had what would be called the more classic hag attack. I think everybody has one or two episodes of that, at least during the course of life, where you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't see anything, but you know there's some horrible, ugly presence there.
Yes, and close.
And very close, and you're paralyzed. I have had those experiences.
The paralysis, the natural sleep paralysis, is caused by what? Do you know?
Well, you'd probably have to talk to a sleep a neuroscientist or a sleep expert about that, but it probably has to do with our nervous system, and it may be a function of the way we dream, you know, not acting out our dreams, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
You're probably so tired and exhausted, you just can't move.
Well, that's certainly the case in some cases where people fall into the quote-unquote dead sleep, and it's a, kind of a heavy torpor. But the inability to move during sleep is part of the natural sleep cycle. And I began to suspect that these entities, because they're very intelligent, they know about these things in human beings, and they're able to make use of these periods when our defenses are really at their lowest.
All right, back to the calls, final calls now. Let us go to Robert in Lubbock, Texas. That's where Buddy Holly used to be. Hey, Robert, thanks for calling.
Hello, George. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for Rosemary and Paul. I was just thinking about coming up as a child, sleep paralysis. I know something is in the room, and it's on me. And but most recently, and I wrote it down in my Bible here under Psalm 23rd, happened on the Sunday, September 12th, 2010. Standing in a local motel here on the third floor, and the same occurrence happened to me about 3 o'clock in the morning. I usually get up, do no writing and studying and so forth, my Bible. And something was, it was dark. I had no safety on my motel room locked, so I know no one could get in. And something was on me. It was in the room. I could feel the presence. It was dark, no light. And because I had awakened, and I know I was awake, and I began to fear, you know, what is this? I could feel the presence of it in there. And so my mind told me, hey, you know, open your eyes and look and see. And then the Lord spoke to me, said, what is here is holy. And so this entity was still there. So I was getting afraid, you know, the Lord spoke to me and said, you know, what is here is holy. So I start reciting the 23rd Psalm, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Huh. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And it left me.
It worked. See, once again, Rosemary, why do these religious things work?
Well, we're tapping into that that collective energy that I mentioned earlier, that millions of people have used these scriptures and prayers as defenses and remedies and protection, and we tap into that. It's an energetic connection to the divine, and especially when we put our own emotions into it, it's very meaningful to us emotionally and in an intense way. It does activate something, and it can repel these darker entities. The puzzling thing are the cases where those remedies don't work or they stop working, and we can't blame it on the individual and their faith or lack of faith because that hasn't wavered. And so what goes on there, that in some of these cases, the entities have the ability to get around this kind of defense.
As a ghost haunts a house, does a shadow person haunt a place as well, or is it a different kind of paranormal experience?
They certainly do haunt, and in their own way. And I've done investigations, sometimes over long periods of time, of homes that have been afflicted by shadow people as well as a lot of other activity. If there is a shadow person that's in a house and it doesn't go anywhere else, it doesn't follow the people when they move, for example, it's being energized probably by the land. And there are other things that go on as well. It's not just shadow people. There would be other kinds of paranormal activity. And that's quite common. A very new home, for example, can have these issues. It doesn't have to be an old place where historically negative things have happened. And they also favor what I call polluted places, which would be like old abandoned jails, prisons, asylums, places where people have been in suffering.
Let's go to Judy in the state of Washington. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I want to talk about the one caller who said there's no proof. I've had plenty of proof, and I've had people witness it, and then they deny it later. So it's the proof is out there many times, but I wanted to call about a particular call in 1964, although I've had experiences since age 7. I was 14 at that time. My mother passed away, and before she passed away, I had the same dream twice. I watched myself helping her while she was in the process of dying, but I never saw her die. Now, I had that twice before she died. Oddly enough, she died on Halloween. That's the way it happened, too. My brother woke me up. He's 10 years older. I was 14. He said, Mom needs your help. So I got up and I was helping her and keeping her clean because...
Remarkable. At 14. Remarkable.
At age 14. And I was home alone in the Boulder Creek area of Santa Cruz Mountains, waiting for an ambulance to come. Excuse me. I was waiting for an ambulance to come, and I called my sister, who was conveniently always gone. She was 2 years older than me, but she was constantly spending the night with friends, and I really didn't know anyone. We were fairly new in that area. So I called her, and she says, Mom's dying, isn't she? And I said, I think so.
Jeez, how old was your mother then?
My mother was 42.
Oh, yeah, too young, way too young.
Pardon?
Way too young.
Yes. Well, there's a story behind that, too, but I'm not going to keep you all night. I went into, well, maybe I will tell you a little about that. I went into a foster home from there, and I don't know how long I'd been there. Not long. I saw myself have a dream within a dream. In other words, I'm dreaming, but I'm watching myself dreaming. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's a lucid dream in a... You know you're in a dream.
Yeah. Well, I see what I think is my mother. Oh, and by the way, my brother took off, and he never looked back. He left me there. He never looked back until he needed some bone marrow. That was about 4 or 5 years ago. But anyway, I saw myself watching my mother walk to me, and I thought she was going to give me a kiss, and I felt really bad because I hadn't told her I loved her when I knew she probably wasn't coming back. So this woman who I looked or I thought was my mother kind of knelt down over me to give me a kiss, and then her whole countenance changed. She turned dark, and she went and she grabbed me to kill me.
Oh, jeez. What do you mean kill you? How'd she try to do it?
Like she was going to choke me to death.
Strangle
she
you.
Grab
huh?
me, and she was very...
And you were wide awake. Like, this wasn't a dream. You weren't sleeping.
I was asleep.
No, you were asleep.
Okay. I was asleep, and then I wake up, but I'm not awake. It's a dream within a dream.
Right. Now, has your mother passed on by this time?
Oh, yeah. She died that night.
She did.
That I waited for the ambulance and called my sister home, and my sister says, Mom's dying, isn't she? Well, I find out later she had a similar dream.
I mean, did she die at the house or in the ambulance?
She died, I believe, in the ambulance on the way to Santa Cruz from Boulder Creek area.
Okay.
But I don't really know.
Rosemary, I want to bring you in here as the expert for a moment. Why would it shapeshift, giving her the impression that it might have been her mother, and then turn into this demon?
This kind of shape-shifting happens all the time, where dark entities will assume forms that other people will trust and be open, and that's how they get their entree. And there are many haunting cases, for example, where a dark entity will take on a child form, for example, because the natural response of an adult on the premises is to want to help a child in distress, and they will masquerade as people we know, as loved ones, even as animals that could be pets, for example. And it's a way of disarming us and getting past our defenses.
It sure is. It sure is. I just wonder how many people, Rosemary, on any given night are experiencing these kinds of entities. I mean, is it an epidemic?
I don't know if I'd call it an epidemic, George, but it's certainly more common than we would like to think. That's my suspicion. Over the years, I've collected so many cases from people I've interviewed and other researchers, and I feel that I've just hit the tip of an iceberg and that this is quite common. Like Paul Tate was saying earlier, people are afraid to talk about it because they don't want to be ridiculed or they're embarrassed or shamed by it. And so we don't hear about a lot of cases. And sometimes people think that other people don't have these experiences. There was something just kind of weird or wrong with them temporarily. And they're shocked to find out that there are people having almost identical kinds of experiences. So I suspect it's pretty common. And I believe that the shadow person encounter, the supernatural assault, is one of the most frequent paranormal experiences that human beings have.
Let's take another call or two then. We've got open lines next hour. Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us. Robert is in Hawaii on Oahu, that island west of the Rockies. Hello, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I just got attacked this morning, as a matter of fact.
You did?
Yes, I woke up choking. And I was telling the screener that, you know, I got my breath back and he went back to sleep. It was about 2 in the morning, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm about to leave to work and I get a phone call from 666.
Oh, don't answer it.
Yeah, caught me off guard. But these kinds of things kind of have been going on for on and off in my life for a while where I wake up choking. I've had some experiences where I had, you know, really bad migraines, and I've actually got some phone calls from no numbers. There's just like maybe 2 lines or even nothing on the screen, but there's a call coming in, and the voice message is these synthetic sounding growls. So what? This has been going off and on, especially after I graduated from high school.
Was it choking, Robert, like you were going to die? Did you feel like you were going to die?
I can't breathe. I cannot breathe. It's like, I cannot breathe. I'm talking about but I can move. That's the thing. I can move.
What got them to release it? Why didn't it continue?
I don't know. That's the thing. I'm literally waking up choking.
What makes them stop, Rosemary? I mean, they could have continued to choke him to death, but they seemed to stop.
There could be a number of explanations, and I wish the djinn would sit down and tell us sometime.
That would be nice, huh? An interview with a djinn. That would be a great show.
Exactly.
I think I'll let you do the interview. I'll.
It may be that there's something that prevents them from doing that energetically. They don't have the ability to go the distance, so to speak. My personal suspicion is that it's part of their terror plan, because if they take you to the brink of absolute terror where they have you convinced that you're about to die or you're in danger of that, and then suddenly the attack stops, That's a very powerful destabilizing element then, and can be more effective than actually doing physical harm.
Absolutely. Rosemary, I want to thank you for being on the program. Get some sleep, and let's keep in touch, okay?
Well, thank you, George. It was a pleasure, as always.
Rosemary's website, visionaryliving.com, and the website for the documentary Supernatural Assault is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It is darkelementsfilms.com. When I come back on Coast to Coast AM in just a moment, we're going to have open lines at the end of the show by popular demand, the Piesaw Bird.